Welcome to another episode of the Work Hard, Play Hard podcast. My name is Rob Murgatroyd, and each week on this podcast, I talk to some of the most fascinating people on the planet in all areas of life, from mindset to fitness to spirituality and, of course, business. Look, I believe you deserve success in all the areas of your life, not only business. But before we get into today's show, you may want to join us on our next Work Hard, Play Hard experience. This year, we're going to be going to Mykonos and Marrakesh. In these experiences, I have hand-selected a group of high-performing business people who are seeking more balance, connection, and they want to celebrate their wins as a reward for the hard work that they put in. If you want someone to curate once-in-a-lifetime experiences and force you to play more, rush over to workhardplayhardexperience.com. Fill out an application so we can jump on a discovery call to see if this is a good fit for you. And remember, excuses are over. It's time to live.
You just need to fall. Like, you need to fall flat on your face. You need to feel the pain. Then you need to figure it out yourself. It didn't matter. I had the most capable, amazing dad and mom and grandparents. Nothing would get through my skull. I had to make the mistakes myself.
I have learned over the past 10 years that I've turned into the person that I am today because I never back down from a challenge. I don't.
But I've learned that by putting myself in situations that are incredibly uncomfortable and things that I am so scared of, that is how I grow into the person, the best person that I can be.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Work Hard, Play Hard show. Today on the show is Heidi Powell. Heidi and her husband, Chris Powell, had a television show on ABC called Extreme Makeover Weight Loss Edition that ran for many years. And today we dig deep into understanding who Heidi Powell is and what makes her tick. We discuss her early years, what led to the television show, her marriage, the challenges with children and business. And there were a lot of surprises, a lot of twists, a lot of turns, a lot of things I didn't expect. But let me tell you this. I fell in love with this woman. She is freaking awesome. Have you ever been in somebody's presence that when they're there, there's a light beam that like bounces off them? Heidi is that lady. She is a spirit, a force, just an absolute love. You will love this episode. Without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Heidi Powell. Heidi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You are so welcome. You know, I have heard so many amazing things about you through some mutual friends, and I'm super excited to dig into this with you today.
Oh, I'm nervous. Should I be nervous about what you heard?
No, you should not. You should not be nervous. But what we're going to do is I'm going to take you back to the 80s.
Oh.
I'm going to rewind the clock back, growing up in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Wow.
In the 80s.
I'm kind of mind blown right now.
How did growing up in an entrepreneurial family inform how you think about the kind of work that you do today?
Well, I mean, in so many different ways. So we can talk about the actual business side of it and basically what's possible for me. And then we can talk about the heart side of it, the heart, mind, and soul side of it.
Yeah.
As far as business goes, working with or growing up with a dad that was very entrepreneurial and very driven, I actually never knew that there was another option, that there was an option not to be driven. I wasn't really given a choice. And so lucky for me, I was able to have a lot of wins and accomplishments by because he kind of forced me to in a way. Mm-hmm. So I knew how it felt to be successful. I knew how it felt to set your mind to something and accomplish it. I also did know how it felt to set my mind to something, not accomplish it against his will, because I was, you know, I think every kid, it's like the more your parents push you, the more you kind of pull against what they say to do.
Yeah.
And so there were a lot of times where he'd be like, Heidi, this is what you need to do. And I'd be like, no.
What did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a real estate investor. And so he was a home builder, real estate investor. Basically anything you could do to make money, my dad did. And he was really, really good at it. And not only was he good at it, but he was a good person with a good heart and just wanted everybody to succeed. He actually grew up teaching me the marker of success is not when you have $1 million in your account. It's when you can make somebody else $1 million. Like, he was so big on helping everybody around him, which I think made him more successful.
All right. I want to talk about what sort of informed your dad, which was your grandfather, which inadvertently informed you. So your grandfather had a big impact on you. You've said that he was one of the most generous and unconditionally loving business owners on earth.
Wow, you did your research.
How did he teach you how to balance the loving side with the sometimes more aggressive business side?
Well, okay, so I should say that my grandpa was like my dad growing up. So I had essentially two dads, mm-hmm. my dad and my dad's dad. Mm-hmm. My dad passed away about 8 or 9 years ago.
I'm sorry.
I should know this. I think it was 9 years ago now. And so my grandpa kind of has always filled in and always been that father figure to us. But he like my dad, it was like he was the same. Hey, it doesn't matter how much money you have in your account. If you're not helping somebody else make that money, if you're not helping change somebody's life, if you don't feel good about it, if you can't wake up every single day and say, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. If you can't, you know, my grandpa's 80 now mm-hmm. and he still works. Mm-hmm. He'll never, ever, ever, ever retire. Like mm-hmm. it's something he just loves what he does. And it's not even what he does as much as it's the people that he gets to work with or he chooses to work with. Mm-hmm. So it never feels like work to him. It just feels like his passion and it feels like his life. And he knows, hey, I'll never feel old if I keep working. But the second I stop is the second I'm going to start dying. Mm-hmm.
And do you live by the same sort of philosophy?
Yeah, I don't know what it's like to not be busy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like to not feel like I'm contributing, to not be a part of something bigger than myself. And I don't know that I want to know what that feels like, because mm-hmm. the moments that I have where I'm stagnant in my life, where I don't feel like I'm moving forward towards something to make me better, those are the moments where any bit of depression, I'm not a depressed person, mm-hmm. But if I were to say, hey, these are moments of depression, it would be where I'm not moving, where I try and sit still. And I do have a hard time mm-hmm. breaking free from work because I feel like those thoughts and those emotions of not being enough and not growing start creeping in and start making me feel less valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. One of the through lines of this show is that sort of yin and yang of that entrepreneurial drive.
Yeah.
You know, the upside is that you keep conquering.
Yeah.
The downside potentially is if you're sitting still, you could spiral the other way.
Yeah.
And it gets a little dicey having that balance between the two. Your first job was balancing grandma's checkbook.
And
for $5.
Did you call and interview people?
I spoke to her.
Did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't. So for $5 an hour, you're balancing grandma's checkbook, right?
Yes.
So the question is...
And I was young. I was like 10.
Well, do you think that they were sort of in some ways grooming you or leading you down this entrepreneurial path? And if the answer is yes... How do you apply that same sort of, I want to use the word work ethic, but how do you apply that same sort of philosophy of nurturing your children in the same way that you were nurtured, let's say?
So yes, and so the grandma that I worked mm-hmm. for was my mom's mom. So we had my dad, and my mom's mom and my dad's dad were very similar, mm-hmm. very driven, very entrepreneurial, both of them. Mm-hmm. And yes, so they both separately really wanted their grandkids to be everything that they felt like maybe they weren't and more. Mm-hmm. And so they were, in fact, they were very always on me for, hey, where are you going to school? When are you going? When are you going to graduate? I mean, it was always that from a very, very young age. Sorry, say your question one more time. So the question
The question was, I really asked you two questions in one. That's why I tripped you up. The first question, I guess the question I want to know is, you have, how many children do you have?
I have four kids. Oh, that's...
You have four. How did, you know, when you think of the four children that you have now, and you think about when you were 10 and you were balancing grandma's checkbook, are you trying to do the same sort of thing with your children now?
Yes, but in a different way, because the world has evolved. So I remember back when I was a kid, but I was also innately into business. Like, that's just part of who I am, probably more so than me innately being a trainer. I am more passionate maybe about the business side of it. Now, the emotional side of it, I am super passionate about all the way across the board, the heart, the soul, all that. But businesses has always been my thing. I loved, there back in the day, there was this thing called Bankit. Did you ever know what Bankit was? Mm-mm. You could order, it was like play checkbooks. And it taught you how to balance checkbooks. It taught you how to count your money and like what a bank statement would look like. And you could write checks. And it was that was all that I ever wanted.
You know, there were Barbies, right?
I was not a Barbie girl. I was not a Barbie. I liked puzzles and Light Bright at a very young age. And I see the world as a big puzzle. I do everything. You tell me a story, I want to know, okay, well, what about that piece? What about that? Okay, wait, there's an inconsistency. These aren't fitting. I see the world as a puzzle.
Yeah.
And I love numbers. I love numbers. I loved checkbooks. And so I grew up doing Bankit. And so that doesn't exist now. I'm sure it does. I'm sure you could go somewhere and get it. But the world has evolved and technology is a bigger thing. And I think my eyes are more open than maybe even my mom, dad, and grandparents were back in the day. And I see, like, you know, back then I remember what seemed like a lot of money or a big success does now seem like, oh my gosh, like I'm actually capable of so much more that I didn't even think I was made for back then. I didn't think anybody was made for it. And oh my gosh, I am. I can actually do whatever I want. So that mentality, like there was a lid back in the day. There's no lid now. No lid. Like I believe I can do anything I want. I want my kids to have that. And so I try to keep their minds thinking that way. Like I also do remember when I started dating back in the day, because I grew up with, my dad was an entrepreneur. He made his own money. He never had a job. He made jobs. He created jobs for people. So that's all that I knew. I worked for him occasionally, but I also didn't like working for him. I wanted to work for somebody else so I could learn and not ride coattails. And I remember dating a guy who was like, oh, you know, I'm going to make a great living. It's going to be great. Basically talking about getting married. And he said, I'm going to have a job as X, I don't remember what it was, and I'll make 6 digits a year. And I remember right away, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do that. I can't. And it had nothing to do with the money. And I remember him saying he was going to make $300,000 a year. Nothing to do with the money, because that was a lot of money. And everything to do with his mentality. I remember thinking, I cannot be with somebody that has a lid, that thinks that that's all that they can do. And I tried to explain it, and I said, No, you can do that, but you need to know we can do whatever we want. Like, there's no lid on how much you can make or what impact you can make it. And it was because he had been raised in an environment where, hey, this is what you graduate to. You're told this is success, right? He didn't really understand the entrepreneurial side of it and the happiness that came from it and the difference between working for somebody and basically being working for yourself. And so, yeah, I try to help my kids with that. In fact, last night, and we have a lot of hard lessons learned. My son has a shirt company and he's 15 and I walked him through. I've been guiding him and walking him through, but you know, he's like me and he does his own thing regardless. And I said, Maddox, get the orders, get the money, order the amount of shirts that people order from you that they pay for. And he decided to kind of go against what I had said. And last night I got the invoice for all the shirts and he had ordered $1,000 too much. And he's like, I just wanted a couple extra. I'm like, a couple extra? There's 60 extra shirts here, Maddox. Who's going to pay the bill? hell? And it hadn't even clicked for him because money was, so we're learning a lot of lessons. And I sat there with him for, that's why I went to bed late last night.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you are not leaving. You're not going to bed until you sit here and figure, like, learn this with me. Like, you need to understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. Go get your shoes. I'm putting a lien on your shoes until you can pay me back.
I'm gonna boot your shoes. this is interesting. Have you ever heard of the book The Big Leap?
No.
Okay. It's a great book. I think you'd love it. And it's all about, it's a psychologist who wrote the book, but it's all about an upper limit problem. And so the upper limit problem is, you know, I believe I can make $100,000 a year or $200,000 a year, mm-hmm. or I believe I can lose this much weight, or I believe that my marriage is worth this. Everybody bumps up against an upper limit problem. With you, you're so aware of there potentially being an upper limit problem that you don't even engage in it at all. There's no upper limit for you, which is why you're as successful as you are.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I don't know that it's always been that way. It's kind of like I was saying, like, I knew even dating Kay with regard to business, there's no limit. But I remember meeting Chris. So my world kind of shifted. Like I thought I was kind of, I never in a million years ever thought I was meant to be in front of camera. Mm-hmm. I was going to have any kind of notoriety. Like I didn't even cross my mind because in my mind, I thought, oh, those people are meant for that. I didn't realize I could, I didn't realize I had the potential to make an impact in this world. Mm-hmm. So I knew business-wise, I could do whatever I wanted to do. I did not know I could make whatever impact that I wanted to make in this world. And I think most people don't realize that. I think they listen to us right now and they're thinking, oh, but that's for them. Like they're made for that. I'm not. And I actually, that was such a huge shift in the last decade of my life. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh my gosh, no. I can actually make an impact too. I have a voice and I can share it. And I can help as many people as I want with it. Mm-hmm. And that it completely shifted my life.
When you go back to that time in your life where you're working in the gym and you're folding towels.
Oh my gosh, and, why am I just mind blown right now?
And you know, then you move on to real estate, right? And you're in the real estate world.
How did you do this? You're going to have to tell me your secret.
What would you tell yourself? If you could whisper in that person's ear, folding the towel in the gym, what would you tell her? Chill out. The future is going to be, what would you say to that person?
Well, so that girl folding towels also had a very dark, disturbing, just horrible eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And she was very depressed. So when I say I'm not a depressed person, I was then. But I didn't know life could be any different. Mm-hmm. I also had just moved from Arizona, where I remember I was a hostess at a restaurant called Vito's Pizza. Mm-hmm. And this sounds so crazy. I remember at that time, and I think a lot of it had to do with my eating disorder, I remember thinking, okay, they're waitresses. I'm not waitress material, which was just crazy.
What way were you not waitress material?
I thought I just wasn't capable enough.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't take the order?
Like I just thought I wasn't made for. It's the craziest thing. Like I knew, get me out of there, I can figure out how to make money. Uh-huh. In a work for somebody environment, I had no idea how to climb a ladder. No idea. None. I remember, you know, even LA, it was a Gold's Gym that I was folding towels at. Same thing. I remember sitting at the front folding towels and seeing the salespeople next to me and thinking, oh, that's for them. I'm a towel folder. And that's me coming from a dad who was an entrepreneur, you know, but at the same time, I knew pull me out of it, put me in a zone I'm comfortable in, and I could do whatever I wanted. But same philosophy with college. I remember thinking, okay, wait, I don't know if I'm made to do well or get good grades. And I was accepted into ASU right after high school. I graduated with a 4.0. Like I had a severe case of, I don't even know, just very insecure with who I was. And it was getting back into real estate. So getting, and I was a trainer too. So I went from there. I was a trainer for a little while. Didn't love it. I did not like being in a gym and telling people what to do and not seeing any results because I couldn't control what they were doing outside of it. And so it was when I decided to get married for the first time and I knew I needed to support my family. I went to what I knew I was good at, and I knew I was good at numbers and got into loan processing. Then I was a loan officer and I started seeing how good I was and how efficient I could be. And I felt like I could run circles around everybody around me. And, okay, if I can do this, what else can I do? Okay, I'm going to go open up my own branch. I can go to auction. I can buy a house. And then I just started buying homes from auction, renovating the homes and selling them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just made $120,000. Mom, can you give me money? Let's go get another house together. And I pulled my brothers into it. And it was something I started seeing. It just takes a little bit of success for somebody to realize like, oh my gosh, I am capable. So talking to that girl in the folding towels, I don't know that she would have listened. So I'm telling you, and I see that in my 15-year-old son. I'm like, you just need to fall. Like, you need to fall flat on your face.
Yeah.
You need to feel the pain. Then you need to figure it out yourself. It didn't matter. I had the most capable, amazing dad and mom and grandparents. Nothing would get through my skull. I had to make the mistakes myself.
You also have a very, I don't want to use the word unusual. You have a very good self-awareness.
Oh,
you know yourself. You know your lane, you know where you're good, and you know where you have challenges, and you navigate, it seems to me, into the lane that works best for you.
I do. As I've gotten older, though, one thing I've realized, it's actually the past 10 years. Yes, so 100% I have the awareness. I haven't always. I have learned over the past 10 years that I've turned into the person that I am today because I never back down from a challenge. Mm. I don't. And I
learned. Does it excite you?
It does now. Mm. It didn't. It was actually marrying Chris. And I remember being like, gosh, if I marry this guy, I'm actually going to have to be responsible and actually live up. He set a bar so high and he's so amazing and he works like he's a workaholic. We all are. And for me, it's like when I take on something, I don't quit at all. That is one thing I am. I am a go, 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 go kind of person. And I learned through him that putting myself, he never had to push me, never. He's never had to pull me. He's never had to push me. I am very self-motivated once I'm there. But I've learned that by putting myself in situations that are incredibly uncomfortable and things that I am so scared of, that is how I grow into the person, the best person that I can be. Like camera, super scary for me. When Chris or somebody wanted to hire me with Chris, I was like terrified out of my mind. But the more I did it, the more I became comfortable with it. And there are still things to this day that do scare me a lot. And if I feel scared, mm-hmm. I know I need to do it more.
What's the thing that comes up for you now that when you think about it, you shake in your boots a little bit and you know you need to do it?
So camera is pretty easy for me. Mm-hmm. Podcasts are pretty easy for me. Mm-hmm. I would say if there's anything that makes me, and it's crazy because logically you put it on paper and I've done it a lot before and I'm fine at it. You put me on stage and let me flow and I'm great. Mm-hmm. I can do it mm-hmm. all day. I feel my way through things and audiences and I know what they need. You put me on stage and you say, deliver a developed speech. Mm-hmm. That for me is like, oh my gosh.
So if I put you on the TED Talk stage and you got 18 minutes to compel me, you're going to pass out.
I would do it and I would kill it because I know me.
but it gets your heart
going. Actually, that's what I need to do. So I was just telling my best friend, I'm like, I am the thought of speaking in it like a structured, organized speaking fashion terrifies me so much. That's what I need to conquer this year.
Yeah.
And I've done it a lot, but most of my speaking though, so I've done, I would say 25% is alone and 75% has been with Chris. Uh-huh. And now this year I am attacking that. And I actually am taking on more speeches and I'm trying to be the best person I can be because I want to be good at it. Damn it.
I got it. You like fast paced.
I like a little bit of pain.
But you also like methodical.
Yes.
Right? So in your mind, what's the playbook for achieving fast-paced and methodical simultaneously, because you could argue that they're different.
Yes, you can.
Do you know what I mean?
And like, I'm one big contradiction.
Right.
I am.
When you think about fast-paced, you know, it's like it's this frenetic, crazy energy. And when you think about methodical, it's maybe somebody more detailed oriented. But when you put the two of them together,
yes,
they don't seem
but
to
But they
fit.
Go together.
How do they go together for you?
Fast-paced doesn't mean you sprint just to sprint. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. To me, fast-paced, fast-paced is slow and steady wins the race. Consistency to me is fast-paced. And as long as I never stop moving, that consistency and pace, whatever it is, beats out all the people that are sprinting, stopping. It's like with a diet. Like when you follow a diet, we were just talking about competing before we started. Mm-hmm. If you follow a diet that's so hard and so restrictive, you're gonna get results and you're gonna get results fast. But what happens after you get results? You go back to your normal habits and it's not a lifestyle and you don't feel like it's something you can maintain, and most people gain that weight back. Same in business and in life, you have to find something that is sustainable forever. And for me, just continually putting one foot in front of the other. Mm-hmm. And that is where I really don't stop, because if I do stop, my pace becomes slower. But by moving forward, even slow, you do maintain a really good pace in life. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I am a big fan of decision-making. Like, you cannot sit and stew. I always say, the worst decision you can make is no decision at all. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people say that, but that's what I try and live by. So I know, hey, I'm at a crossroad. I need to make a choice. Okay, so I can go this way, I can go this way. If I sit here and weigh out the pros and cons for too long, neither choice is going to be a good choice. But if I make one, even if it's the quote unquote wrong choice, it's actually going to be the right choice, because I'm going to learn really quickly it's the wrong choice and I'm going to abort mission and move the other direction. So it's by continually moving and doing my best. But luckily, I do think pretty well on my feet. And in business, I'm pretty intuitive with what I do. I believe that any choice that I make, I can make it the right choice.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I had seen General Schwarzkopf do a talk once, and they were asking him, there was some military spending thing that they were trying to figure out, and it was going back and forth for years. And they had this one person had this view, the other person had that view. It went on, and he said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this, and this is the reason why we're going to do it, and because this way it's going to work. Everybody walks out of the room, and the person in the room said, how did you know that was going to work? He said, had no idea it's going to work. We've got to make a fucking decision.
You do.
Like this is going on for 3 years. Like, just make one. If we screw up, we'll go the other way.
I love it.
But let's do it. The other thing that came to mind is, this is interesting. They've done research. You know, like you've got a 15-year-old. You know how 15-year-olds drive, right? They're changing lanes and they think they're going to get fat. They're going to get there faster.
Yeah.
But all the research shows that staying in the lane will get you there at the same time than it would if you were weaving in and out.
Well, it's like standing in line at Disneyland. You know, there's six lines you can stand in to get in. You can keep switching back and forth, but just stay in the same damn lane.
Right.
And that's actually something my dad always used to say, stay in your own damn lane. And for a lot of reasons, for comparison reason, but he'd say, just go, just look straight forward, know what your goal is and go. Stop thinking, hey, this way is going to be better. This way is going to be better. It's like, I mean, the comparison game in life too, in general, it's like, oh, what they're doing over there is working for their business. Maybe I should adopt that method. Oh, what they're doing over here is, no, just go. Trust, believe, be happy for them that they're finding success. But the more you change directions and say, oh, this diet, oh, this diet, oh, this, you got to stay on path.
I want to touch base on something you mentioned. You were struggling with an eating disorder from your teens well into your 20s.
Yeah.
When you look back on now, do you have a grasp for where that stemmed from and why? And how do you think about it differently?
Yeah, and I have a couple different thoughts on that. In one sense, I believe that it stemmed. I can't blame anybody. You're going to sit in a therapist's office, and I have, and they'll be like, "Oh, it's your dad's fault. It's your mom's fault. It's my fault." Mm-hmm. But I grew up in a very fit family, And so for me,
mom and dad.
Yeah. My mom, was super little Barbie, muscle Barbie growing up. And my dad was like Mr. Clean. He was like Mr. Clean, bald head, just muscles everywhere.
Yeah.
Tall guy. And so, yeah, they never did anything or told me I wasn't good enough, but I believe, and I was the only girl, three brothers, only daughter. And I felt like, I think I was always striving for my dad's approval and my dad loved my mom and just doted on her and she was his queen and he was so proud of her. And I mean, until the day he died, he was hugging her and loving her and kissing her and just, oh, you look so beautiful. You did such a good job. And I felt like in order to get love, and he didn't do this, he didn't say this, but I felt like I needed to be that. And so I was constantly comparing myself to her. And always feeling like it, and naturally I'm a little bigger structure. I'm a couple inches taller. And growing up though, when you have an undeveloped teen brain or 10-year-old, 11, 12, 13, up through my teens, I didn't notice, oh, I'm just a taller person. I thought, oh, I'm fat. I remember being like, oh, I'm bigger than her. I'm fat. And I was always super self-conscious of my body. And I was a twig. Looking back, I'm like, what was I even thinking?
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. And so I ended up blowing out my ACL twice in cheer. And in my mind, I had this idea that if I can't work out, I can't stay skinny. And I was a flyer in cheer. So I was the one that they threw up in the air. And I stopped eating. And my dad noticed me stop eating. And he was like, hey, I'm going to force feed you. Force fed me, and I taught myself how to throw up when nobody was looking, because it was something I was so deathly afraid of, not being enough by way of not being my mom. And it was misinformation. So that, to go back to whose fault is it? It's mine, because I just didn't understand enough. I didn't. And I, even when I had met Chris, like, yeah, I wasn't binging and purging and I thought I had my eating disorder under control, but there was a major sense of body dysmorphia still there and misinformation, not understanding. Yeah, I was a trainer and I knew I could put people on plans, but not understanding what my body was capable of and what, how much food your body actually takes to function and to build muscle. And then add to it, I mean, another whole facet, another side is I didn't have very many victories or very many things that I had accomplished that I felt good about. And so for me, realizing my potential and little by little, just like, oh my gosh, I can do this. It helped me love myself. Realizing my body's potential and knowing, oh my gosh, yeah, I need to eat 2,600 calories to actually build the muscle that I need, so that my body can effectively burn fat. Now,
which is the opposite of what you were doing.
Complete opposite. Yeah, I had no idea. I was under the school of thought that most people are today. I need to run and I need to eat less and no carbs. And I always had a body I felt like was skinny fat, and it kept me in this eating disorder cycle where actually hiring a coach when I started competing, getting on stage usually puts people in a downward spiral. For me, it helped pull me out.
It gave you the structure.
It did. And I had to trust somebody. Somebody had to say, Heidi, you need to eat 350 carbs, 120 grams of protein, and 50 grams of fat a day. And I could freak out all I wanted. And he said, if you don't do what I say, I will not work with you. And I did. And I freaked out. And I would check in with him every week, like, you know, any coach would check in with their client. And he would say, get out of your head. You're going crazy. Follow what I say. You're right on track. And that for me would be like, okay, I need it. So we need that feedback from people in our lives that we trust. I think that's very important.
It's interesting. I had on that that day there at TB12, I had interviewed Tom Brady's trainer.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what the question that I asked him exactly, but it was something along the order of, you know, does he follow everything that that you tell him?
Yeah.
He said, well, in the beginning it didn't. He told me that he wanted to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so to do that, I said, I don't want you lifting any weights. We're going to be doing band work and pliability work and stuff like that. And one day I came to the gym and he was lifting weights and I packed my shit up and I left. And he's like, where are you going? I said, I'm done with you. I'm not training anymore. He's like, okay, I'll listen to you. And he said, from that day, it was the only time it's ever happened. So what I love about that story is that your ability to listen to a coach who says, like, I know you think you know best.
Yep.
But you don't.
Yep.
Because there's a strategy and there's a formula. And if you follow this, we're going to get you there.
Yep.
So the fact that you did that was great. So, okay, you've been mentioning Chris. And for those listeners that don't know, your husband is Chris Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And as fate would have it, in 2008, you met that dreamboat hunk of a man.
You are so good.
you guys were at a self-development seminar.
Yes, we were.
And so, you know, I'm making this picture in my head. You've got an eating disorder. You're a single mom at the time. He's living out of his car. He's got a bunch of debt.
Yeah.
Can you kind of take me back to that moment and maybe describe for me what that time in your life was like? Because there's that... You know, there's that precipice that we come on, right? You're now, you know, you're single, you've got kids, and you know, you got this eating disorder, and you're at a development seminar, and he comes in, and he's like living out of his car, he's got a bunch of debt, but then you meet, and then dynamite happens, right? Then
it
explodes,
actually.
But in that moment, it wasn't dynamite.
Yep.
It was coming to a head.
The stars aligned,
right.
And the heavens opened.
There you
and
go.
And they actually, crazy as it sounds.
Take me back to that time and walk me through, from your perspective, that place in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was divorced, newly single, mom of two, like you said. And I was pretty secure in who... I realized something about myself. I realized a lot about myself. As long as I have somebody there, I'm very secure in who I am. It's
somebody
crazy.
In relationship, you mean?
Whether they are healthy or not. Whether they are stable or not. For
just,
me,
just a man?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not a healthy thing. So
yeah.
I'll tell you, when I say that, mm-hmm. I recognize about me that's something I need to work on in my life right now. Because it is very uncomfortable for me to be alone.
Mm.
And my past, you know, my first husband, we were going through some things and he had some struggles, some addiction issues.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that though, I had found happiness and stability, not necessarily with him, but in myself.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce happens mm-hmm. and it was my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as much as I felt like I was better off alone, alone is such a scary thing for me. So I went from relationship to relationship to relationship to, I mean, literally,
mm-hmm.
I was this perfect Mormon girl growing up.
Oh, you were Mormon?
I was
How
Mormon.
The hell did I
How
miss?
How did you miss that?
Oh my God. The pizza place pissed me off when you said it a minute ago that I missed that. Mormon? I'm ready to leave. Wow.
Yeah, I was raised Mormon. And
are you still?
I haven't been maybe since I
Can
met
you
Chris.
Be a Mormon and like be an ex-Mormon, or is it, are
well,
you once I've, a Mormon, always a Mormon?
I've never extracted my name from mm-hmm. the records, and I wouldn't be opposed to going back if I felt like church was something that I wanted or I wanted for my family. There's comfort and there's peace in what you know as a child from your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been to a lot of different churches, but just naturally because I was raised in that environment, I do feel peace going there. Now, religion is religion is religion. I don't mm-hmm. know that I'm not a believer that one's better than another. Mm-hmm. I think they're all great. I think it's where you find peace and you find happiness. For me, it's spirituality
mm-hmm.
is the most important thing. And I don't think you need a church for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I wanted a church and if I wanted structure, there is something comforting about that for me, but I haven't gone in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
My two older kids do go with their dad, and mm-hmm. when they have things that go on, I attend or I go support. But my two younger kids with Chris, they don't.
So we're gonna get back to. I know we got a lot of balls in the air. we're gonna go back to your
Mormon.
Your ex husband, is the addiction still there, or is that part done?
Yeah, no, it was still there when we were
divorcing. Now.
No, he's good now.
Now he's good. Okay,
yeah.
But he's a Mormon as well.
He is.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay, and your children are, I guess, by proxy Mormons.
Yes, they
okay.
are.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So now, take me back to the self-development time. Which, by the way, which event was that?
It was Landmark Forum.
Okay, Landmark. My daughter just did it.
Oh, mm-hmm. I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like everything. Mm-hmm. Everything and everyone, there's good and there's bad.
Yeah.
You just take the good and you go with it and you leave the bad.
Hard sell at the end, but it was
that's it. Yeah. And I prep everybody that goes in. I'm like, they're going to sell you.
Right.
Stand your ground. This
it's
is
the
your
only
chance.
Thing. If they just pulled that part out of it, it's magic.
I know, but I think
gross.
A lot of the world, they're sheep. And so most of the people can't say no.
Right.
And so they get people in by almost forcing them. Like, it was really uncomfortable many a time. Every time I go, I'm like, no.
I get it. Because everybody's reluctant. Okay. Yeah. So you're at Landmark. You meet Chris there.
You guys are
broken, you know, however you want to phrase that. You're in different places in your life.
And I did not want a man. So I showed up every day at that self-improvement seminar, because I was like, I'm done. I need to figure out how to be alone. And I think I was alone for about a month.
Mm, right.
Maybe.
Which is a good stretch for you at the time.
It was a long time.
Yeah.
And I was in sweats, no makeup. I had a hat. Mm-hmm. Well, under the sweats, I had on a tank top.
Mm-hmm.
And at one of the breaks, Chris and I were the only two people that packed our own food.
And he's like, nice arms.
Oh, well, and I, He did.
Yeah.
He said, his exact words were, I want to know what you did to get those biceps.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh gosh. And I remember seeing him across the room, and I didn't think anything because he just, I don't know. I wasn't in the headspace. I do remember thinking, oh hell, I think that guy's probably going to hit on me, because I could kind of.
You felt it?
Yeah, a little bit. And I think I had this stereotype in my head that gym rats all hit on blonde hair, blue eyed girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so
like attract like. I got it.
And so, he made the comment about my biceps, and I'm like, oh gosh, like turn around. I talked to him a little, because I'm a nice person, so I will never blow anybody off.
Yeah.
I talked to him. He's super sweet. His voice is a little shaky. I could tell he was nervous. Then he went and answered some questions up in front of everyone later in class, and his voice was shaky again. So I felt like I was making him a little bit nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up bringing me a gift the next day. And I'm like, oh gosh, this guy is just, I don't know.
Day one, day two?
So day two is when he complimented my biceps. Day three.
You got the gift.
I got the gift.
Okay, what did he give
you? Now this gift was, at the time, I thought it was him trying to win me over. It was really, he wanted me to be aware of his product. It was Stack System. So the Stack System, it was a nutrition system that taught you how to eat by colors and numbers. And it basically was a cooler system that he came up with. And you feel the proteins, carbs, fats up to your body weight. And I mean, he explained the whole thing. He was super passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, I saw you brought your own food. I want you to have this. And so I had a Stack System, and we exchanged email addresses, not phone, not numbers for some reason. And there was a day three of the seminar 2 days later. It was like a Tuesday night. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I could tell he wasn't getting much out of the seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, that's just how. And I was like, oh, integrity. You do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. If I say I'm going to be there Tuesday night at 6 p.m., I'm going to be there Tuesday night at 6 p.m.
Yep.
Well, so I was emailing. We emailed back and forth a couple times. Hey, thanks for this, whatever. Are you going to be there Tuesday? And he had said, oh, I'm not quite sure. And I responded and said, yes, you will, because you have integrity.
Wow.
And he showed up Tuesday. He was not going to go. He was going to bail because his life was busy, and he had, you know, this product to bring to the masses, and he was going to save the world. And he had this tattoo down his side that said, you know, I'm going to save one to, it was Roman numerals, one through a million. And in his mind, that seminar was getting in his way.
Mm.
So that's where he and I connected, was that night. I gave him a ride to his car after the seminar. We sat in the car and we talked. And I remember him like a scared little boy, was like up against the side of my car, like, I'm not interested in a relationship. And I said, neither am I. I'm a single mom of two.
Mm-hmm.
You are not what I want in somebody that way. But we just got to talking, and you can't be in Chris's presence without realizing right away he is different. And I mean that in every sense of the word, and in such a good way. He is unique. Like, there are things about him where you're like, gosh, he doesn't know how to settle down. But I also think, and I was telling him this the other day, balance-wise for him is different than it is for most people. I think for him, he's on this earth to make a big impact, to make a difference, and he will not stop until he does, until the impact is the size that he wants it to be. And I don't think he'll ever reach it.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved what he was doing and what he was about, and just his goodness and his positivity. And I knew he was right away. He's like, I'm a few a few hundred thousand dollars in debt. I kind of went through all my baggage and I'm like, I can help you. Mm-hmm. I actually did home loans I do home loans still. Mm-hmm. I've cleaned up a gazillion people's credit scores. Let me come help you. I'll come help you pull you out of debt. I didn't say it like that, but let me help you with your, he hadn't filed taxes in 4 years. He didn't know how to balance a checkbook. He didn't know any of the stuff that I knew really well. So I was self-employed. So I showed up at his house every other day and I helped him clean up his life. So
was there any romantic, looking back now, not at that time, because at that time you were clear about your intentions and what you wanted.
Yes.
But looking back now, was there a connection, a flirtation, a budding romance? Because when I'm, you know, we were talking earlier before the show started, my wife was my trainer, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I love that.
She was getting married.
Yeah.
And there was, we were just friends, but we were at the gym and we were just, she was training me and we were laughing and I definitely felt a connection, but there was nothing romantically going on. I mean, she was getting married.
Yeah.
And a month after the marriage didn't work, a month later, I started to put together in my mind, oh my God,
she's right there.
Like she's right there and we're connected.
Yeah.
Was there anything like that for you?
There was definitely connection. So as far as friendship goes, we were best friends right off the bat. And for me, that's how love develops. I'm a believer that you don't fall into love, you grow into love. Mm. And I think the people that I've fallen in love with, it doesn't last. It's very temporary. But the people who I've grown into love with are the people that are around for my entire life. And for Chris, it was that way. We were immediately best friends. We knew we wanted to be best friends. We knew, we actually would say, again, really no romance. He's a really good looking guy. And he would say at the time, he thought I was a really good looking girl, but we actually were not physically attracted to each other. I know that sounds weird. It wasn't anything where we felt like, oh my gosh, we can't. Where there are people where it's like magnetic. You're like, oh, I can't stay away from this person. We were attracted to each other's souls and energy big time.
Yeah.
And he made me want to be a better person and I made him want to be a better person. And so we couldn't not be around each other for that. And we would say, hey, it sounds so cheesy, but we would laugh and say, I think we're energy partners. Like, I think whatever happens with our bodies after this life, like you and I, our energy coexisted together before. Like we were meant to be here right now doing this. And I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah, you gave me chills. That's when you gave me. Yeah. They say I did an interview with a psychic once. She said when you get chills, it's God sending a confirmation that that's true.
Oh, and I have chills. and I believe that. And you know, we actually never wanted to get married. And I actually, in a weird way, proposed to him. Not really, but he wanted a baby. Mm. He wanted his blood to
and
carry on.
You already had two.
I already had two.
Yeah.
And I had said, well, if you want me to have your baby, you have to marry me because I can't with my kids and the Mormon upbringing and my dad, who was very strong and firm, like I could not get married. So literally 5 days later, we were heading to Portland to go see his mom and dad. And we're like, well, let's just do it in Portland.
And get married.
Yeah. So we just quickly got married. My mom and dad they weren't even going to come up because they're like, okay, cool. Yeah, do whatever. They were super supportive.
Is he Mormon?
Chris? No.
He's not. And how does that work, having one not and one?
If I was a devout Mormon, it would be a problem.
Okay.
But because he opened my eyes to, and I actually had also, when I was dating him in the beginning, not dating or hanging out with him, I had done the missionary discussions because I was like, gosh, what? I'm Mormon and I don't even know a damn thing about this religion. Mm-hmm. So I did have missionaries come over and teach me. Mm. I was searching for answers myself. Mm-hmm. And what I landed on, I kind of went with Chris's school of thought, which is, hey, religion is, there's not one right and there's not one wrong. They're all great. They all have things that, you know, I can pull from Buddhism. I can pull from all these things. Like what's so beautiful about that particular religion. And what it really boils down to, the root of it is finding connection with God or with, you know, a higher power and yourself really, and finding peace. And so for us, it has never, we have not had one argument about religion, which is very rare.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Especially in a religion like Mormonism. Yeah.
But I loved his, that was part of what I loved about him from the beginning was I loved his perspective. I loved he was good at what I was not good at. Mm-hmm. And I was good at what he was not good at. And there was so much respect from the beginning for that. And we knew, okay, we're in each other's lives for a reason. But the marriage was a byproduct of us connecting and working together.
Along those same lines, you guys were both super interested in fitness, and he was a bit more calories in, calories out.
Gosh, you're so good.
And you were a bit more on the emotional yeah. side of things, right? What did you learn from him, and what did he learn from you to create that 1-2 punch that you guys are so famous for?
Well, I naturally, when you hear somebody say something over and over and over and over, you become an expert. I mean, you figure it out. So I did learn a lot, and I'm a smart person. I got straight A's and I didn't really have to study, but I just didn't have interest in the physiological, like the sciencey side of it. Mm-hmm. I had interest in, I have interest right now in connecting with you mm-hmm. and talking to you.
Yep.
Where Chris, if he were talking to you, he'd be like, okay, let's talk about science. He's very passionate about the science side of things. And so I learned the jargon. I know how to build a meal plan. I know what calories do. I know about protein, carbs. So I know how the body works. And physiologically, I can put that together. And by consequently, you know, for my strengths, which is connecting with people, he has learned a lot about, I am a very non-judgmental person. And I grew up in a family, my dad was an addict and, you know, I had my eating disorder and we learned a lot from our rehabilitation processes that we brought into transformation with Chris. And he's learned a ton about that because that's something he didn't really understand. He didn't understand the emotional side of it. So he has definitely grown those skills and I've definitely grown the skills that he has. But I am a believer, and I can't speak for Chris on this, but I am a believer that while I love those skills and I'm glad that I understand the body and how it works and I need to, I love the partnership that he and I have created so that I can do what I'm best at mm-hmm. and he can do what he's best at and we can thrive in it and find passion in it. Because I think it's no man is an island. You can't do what you want to do alone. You need a team. So why not find the people that are passionate about and good at the things that you're not?
For sure. So now the television show.
Yes.
ABC comes along.
Yes.
There's a little tiny show called Extreme Makeover.
Tiny, teeny tiny.
Weight loss edition.
Yeah.
And Heidi Powell, Chris Powell mm-hmm. are the stars. What were the steps that ultimately led to...
To that.
To getting that show, yeah.
So before I had met Chris, he had worked with a guy... helped him lose 400 pounds over the course of 2 years. David Smith was his name.
Yeah.
And Chris wasn't really, I didn't know who he was. He wasn't well known. He kind of was this guy just trying to make a difference. And so when I met him and I was able to kind of free him from those things, the finances and all that, it allowed him to focus on training. So he was building a website. I was helping because I was fit. We love fitness together. And I was kind of, he would, you know, have me do new segments with him, whatever. He ended up getting, so a production company reached out to him about doing a show, a TLC documentary called 650 Pound Virgin. And so that was his very first, and it wasn't even about Chris. It was about David, the guy he had helped who lived with Chris at the time. And they did a documentary. It was a hit. They came back for a second. And I was just background, helping with contract. Let me do this. I wasn't even much in the fitness space with him at this time. The producer... Chris had done a couple other reality shows back in the day. We won't even go into that right now. He'd probably kill me if we did.
We don't have to go into too deep on that. But so what I'm hearing is that you were quite comfortable behind the scenes.
Very. I was only comfortable behind the scenes.
But he was very interested. And this is not an ego thing because I get what he's saying. Or I guess I get what I think he was after. His mission was so big that he was willing to use whatever platform he could to get in front of a camera.
And when you meet him, his charisma and his dynamic nature on camera, he is a performer. Like he, and one of my kids is, our kids, Cash is the same way. Chris is made to be in front of people. He's made to perform. He's made, like he has such a gift for it. Like it would be, and it's a good thing he has a good heart and a great mind because he can take that and he can impact people on a massive level that way. Mm-hmm. So he knew he wanted a TV show and he actually would, he said, you know, I'm going to be the Ty Pennington of weight loss. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, this producer reaches out that he knew from the past and said, wow, I see you on, you know, 20, whatever. Well, I don't know what show, the Today Show promoting 650 pound version. I'm so happy for you. Congrats. What are you up to? And Chris emailed back and said, we're doing transformations here in Arizona. And I was helping here and there. Do you want to shoot it? And
this was a production company for the 600 pound version.
This is a different production company that Chris had worked with in the past on his like little cameos in a reality show.
Okay.
Do you want to shoot it? And she said, oh my gosh, let me talk to my boss. And we ended up, she said, hey, JD Roth, who's here locally, he had a company called Three Ball back in the day. JD wants to meet with you. Come on out to LA. And so Chris and I was just his, I'm like, oh my God, I was his protector. So I'm like, I'll come with you as your assistant. And so we drove out to LA. We met with them at the offices right here. And then, you know, Chris threw out his vision and said what he wanted to do and drove back home, drove out again a month later and kind of laid it out, had phone calls. And I was just hey, Chris, let's keep this in order. Let's make sure they don't take advantage. And he ended up getting a call and it was like, 3 months of nothing, ended up getting a call from JD saying, hey, we sold your show. It was a bidding battle between A&E and ABC and ABC won and you're the trainer. And it was just, they basically showed footage of Chris, you know, working with David on the documentary. And so Chris, I mean, less than a month later, flew out and all of a sudden he went from doing one transformation, David Smith, one, to season one was 8 people at once. And these people, so when you work with someone that has a couple hundred pounds to lose, more often than not, there's a lot of emotional baggage, emotional trauma that's brought them to where they are. So that, and that emotional side of it wasn't really Chris's specialty. With David, he built a friendship with him. So David would do whatever Chris wanted him to because David was trying to win Chris's approval. Now throw 8 people together. And Chris, it was just, he was a head case. I mean, every week, I don't know what to do. And so I was his life coach from the time I met Chris. And so I coach him through it. I don't know what to do with this person. They're going to kick this person off. And so soon enough, I was like, send him to Arizona. Send him to Arizona. I'll take care of him. Because I knew addiction. Mm-hmm. I knew it from my dad. I knew it from myself. I had an eating disorder. They had an eating disorder. Yeah, my ex-husband and my bulimia and anorexia. I was so ashamed of it. I never even told Chris I had an eating disorder ever until the show. Because I had to open up to these people so they would understand that I am you.
Yeah.
I just knew how to hide it. Mm-hmm. My skin didn't show that I was binging. Yours is showing. Mm-hmm. And so that is how it was behind the scenes. I would go everywhere with, because he couldn't handle, it was season one was 8 people. 6 months later, so we're only halfway through season one, season two gets picked up. So we have 8 more people. Then season three gets picked up and they double the number of people. So we're literally juggling 16 to 20 people at a time. It required the both of us. Yeah. And so we opened up an Arizona house and they would ship all the problem children to me in Arizona. And I would run it with my team and I became a trainer again. And I mean, I was a trainer by trade, but I didn't want anyone to get kicked off the show.
Yeah.
I wanted every single person. I'm a saver. I'm a fixer. I wanted to fix Wally in season one. I wanted to fix Christy in season two. I wanted to, all these people, I wanted Nyla in season two, all the ones that were hard slept on my kids' beds until we opened up a house. And it was, I loved it. I loved feeling like I was making a difference. I loved being a part of it. I loved that my kids would come to the track with me every single morning and we'd go running with these people. I love seeing my kid, I'll cry, but like they would run through the finish line at a 5K with them. And just my kids to this day only know helping people in need. And I love it. So that's the producer saw Matt Osmus was our showrunner. Mm-hmm. And he's like, wow, like I love what's really happening. Let me try and let me bring this up to ABC. This is a family thing. It's not just one person. It's bigger than one trainer. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of started testing and bringing me on. And it wasn't until season 4 when I was officially a co-host in the opening credits. And season 5 was the same. And which was terrifying for me because I'm like, camera. Mm-hmm. But But I used to tell Chris, hey, as long as they don't like make me recite lines and I can just, they can just follow me around. Like if I can just be in my groove, I'm good. Mm-hmm. If I have to act, mm-hmm. I'm just not a performer like Chris right. is. I just don't like it. I feel mm-hmm. awkward. You can tell I'm faking it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not.
And,
I just
and they were cool with that.
Yeah. I mean, luckily it was a reality TV show. So they, and there were times where I'd have to do interviews and like, hey, Heidi, tell me about this. And I would just suck it up for right. a while. I was not good. Right.
So that started, what was the first year of the show?
2000. Okay. So let's see. Cash was born in 2011. So it aired in 2011, season one did.
Yeah.
And we started shooting in 2010. 2010, we started shooting. 2011 is when it aired.
Yeah.
And then it was every year after that.
For so how
11,
long?
12, 13, 14, 15. Summer 2015 was the last season that mm-hmm. aired.
And why did it stop in 2015?
If you know how network television works, it's a lot of it has to do with who's in charge at the network. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was that it was a bad show. It really carried itself. They didn't have to put a ton of marketing dollars behind it. It was a really feel-good show that was easily packaged up, and it's been sold to 148 countries. Yeah, it's worldwide, which is great. And you can stream one episode on Hulu or, you know, it was on TLC, OWN, and Discovery for a while, and you get a feel right away in that two-hour episode. You're whole and complete. You mm-hmm. just saw someone's story. So it's not like you have to watch a whole season
yeah.
to get goodness out of it. It just comes down to the people in charge. And, mm-hmm. and someone, we had kind of made it through a few different exec changes at ABC. And then, you know, another exec came in and one went out. And naturally, their job is to make the network better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to bring in more money and to make sure they have the programming that people will watch. And it's that, like we talked about decision-making. Mm-hmm. One of their decisions was, hey, let's try this. Right or wrong, they needed to plug something in, push us out, see if something new would get more ratings. It didn't. Mm-hmm. I think the next show only went a couple episodes and it got canned. Mm-hmm. But that's just the way that it is. And while it was really hard for Chris, for both of us, I felt like I did so much heavy lifting behind camera and then on camera seasons 4 and 5. I welcomed the break. I was like, okay, this is meant to be. Mm-hmm. This is meant to be. And Chris, keep in mind, you've wanted to do this, this, this. You have all these businesses, all these people you want to help. You can't do it when we're filming a show. Mm-hmm. There's too much going on. This is a blessing. Let's take the silver lining and let's run with it. And so we finally were able to, it gave us the time and we had the right resources in our life, the right people that allowed us to build the app platform, Transform with Chris and Heidi, that we can help thousands of people at one time.
Okay. We're going to link to that in the show notes. I'll tell you when we turn the record button off, but have some friends here in town who had a reality show as well.
Yeah.
And when it got into sort of the second year of being on the network, it became very scripted and yeah. they were looking to create, challenges within their marriage.
Yeah.
You know, they were looking for fighting, arguing, things like that.
Yeah.
Did you have to deal with any of that? Because you were at the beginning or
did we were after Biggest Loser. So we started after Biggest Loser.
Yeah.
So you would think by that point that would be the case. We got really lucky.
Yeah.
And to me, like for a show to be a hit, you have to have the right network, the right production company, the right producer, the right producers, the right editors, the right, all these different people. And we did, we had it all. Everyone was great. Obviously there were challenges, but I wouldn't change a thing about it. I will say, so to me, I feel like season one was the hardest, the most challenging season because all the world knew at the time was The Biggest Loser.
Yeah.
And so they knew Jillian Michaels in people's faces yelling. That's all that they really knew. And so I think they expected that from Chris and they were just like any good production company would. They were guiding him and saying, Chris, this is what gets ratings. This is who you need to be. Find that. Get this. This is what's going to change the people's lives. But we realized really quickly that Biggest Loser is only 3 months. And if you take that same approach with somebody who we're stuck with, we were all stuck with each other for one full year. Mm-hmm. We lose trust so fast.
Yeah.
And the production company, the producers all saw it too. And so they allowed us to kind of document or to adapt the mentality of I would tell Chris, because he'd call and be like, oh, we need ratings. We need weight loss. And I'd say, Chris, it's transformation first, mm-hmm. shoot a show second. Mm-hmm. If we focus on shooting a show first, the transformation will never, ever, ever happen. That's now, great. In other reality shows, people aren't dealing with as much emotional stress. And so you don't have to really worry about that, right? Yeah, you have to clean up the pieces later in the marriage because you just created drama on national television. But with us, we really had to focus on, like, if you were my client, you had to know no matter what that I have your back, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what ABC says, I'll cry saying it, but no matter what any of the producers said, you, Rob, I have your back. Mm-hmm. And if I have to go in there, like, I'm going to play nice with everybody because I want ABC to win. I want Three Ball to win. I want all my whole team to win. And I really want you to win. And it was my job and Chris's job to let them know, because we knew they needed challenges. Mm-hmm. They need vulnerability. And we had to explain to the people that we worked with, if your story is too happy, if you don't want to show the dirt, if you don't want to show the darkness, no one will connect with you. Why are you doing this in the first place? Yeah. Oh, you're doing it to help people? You're not going to connect or help anybody if you can't let them know that you've been binging. If you can't let us show that. And it was really amazing for us because they would trust us and open up little by little. Not only, their episode was a lot better, but they healed so much faster. Sure. And then they would open up to us about something because they trusted us. Mm-hmm. And then I would have to say, Kay, do you mind if I tell Matt, who was our showrunner? Here's how, I promise you, Matt's not going to jump. And Matt and I had an agreement too. Matt and Chris and I, we all did. Hey, if we tell you what Alyssa's going through, you can't bombard her. You can't blindside. And we learned because we had mistakes where mm-hmm. we did blindside people.
Yeah.
And so we created a really great thing where Chris and I were kind of just in the middle and it, awesome dynamic. So they let us create transformation.
When you look back, you guys had created sort of a very safe house, a bubble, a supportive environment.
Yeah.
But then you leave, yeah. right? They go on.
Yeah.
Have you done any sort of studies, work, looking back and see what percentage of the change sticks?
Yeah. And I know Chris doesn't like talking about these numbers, but the reality is I would say at least 50% gain the weight back.
Mm-hmm. That's actually really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And even some of the people that keep it off, mm-hmm. they find a homeostasis. They find where their body and their mind is happy. And it's easy to poke holes in the methodology and say, oh, your plan didn't work. But the reality is the plan worked. But you have to work the plan.
It's all here.
You know, and it is. And every single, so Chris and I learned a lot. Season one, partially through season two, it was all diet and exercise. Because mm-hmm. it was mostly Chris on his own and we just didn't, I was saving people. Then we learned, it's like, okay, so we need to let them know that they can tell us anything and we're not going to get mad. We're not going to be the trainer that yells in their face. We're going to say, thank you. Okay, you fell off track for 2 months and you're just now telling me? Mm-hmm. Inside I might be like, what the? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But my job is to say, thank you. Because if I do anything other than that, they're not going to trust, right? And then we can actually, when they trust, we can work on the emotional, the mental, we can work on the heart, we can work on their soul. We sit down though, at seasons 4 and 5, very much so, at the end of the year, and we would preach life lessons and it's about integrity, it's about this until we're, hey, let's play the transformation game, not the numbers game. It doesn't matter what the scale says, basically like it's the long game, not the short game. Yes, you need to have a finale. You need to hit your goal and there's a network on you for that, but you also need to keep the long game in mind. And it was really easy for me and Chris, those, you know, finales both years to sit when we sat in a room and we would pour out everything. Guys, you need a goal next. You need going through that stuff. The ones that had the attitude of, mm-hmm. I got this. Like, what are they even doing? I know how to do this. I reached my goal. Those are the ones where like, you're going to gain the weight back. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them did. The ones like Bruce Pitcher, I don't know if you've, mm-hmm. he's our head coach now over at Transform. And he's kept the weight off now for 6 years. The ones like Bruce that were like, gosh, okay, I'm once an addict, always an addict. I'm a food addict. Mm-hmm. And I need to surround myself with, who actually took our teachings, I need to surround myself with people that make me uncomfortable, people that keep me striving to be the best me. I need to know what my downfalls are. I need to know that I need to make a goal. I need to know all these things. The ones that were prepared for it at their best are the ones that have been able to, for the most part, keep the weight off. There are most of them, though, it's once you lose the weight, you think you're never going back mm-hmm. until you do.
Until you do.
Yeah.
I want to talk about being a celebrity.
Oh, I don't even think I'm a celebrity.
I'm sure you don't. You're extraordinarily grounded. But here's the question. There had to become a moment where, you know, one of your kids were looking up and the television and, you know, mommy and daddy are on TV. Or, you know, you're going into a restaurant and somebody's going, I think that's Heidi Powell. Talk to me about some of those first moments and talk to me about how that felt for you.
It's so funny because I don't know that I've ever really...
Or was that just not a thing?
It was such a transition for me because it started with... And it's different because what we're appreciated for and given accolades for is actually doing good in somebody's life instead of... being on TV.
Right.
It is really uncomfortable if people are like, oh my gosh, you're a celebrity. That I can't.
You can't connect to that.
Still, no, not at all. No, okay. Because I'm at home just like they are trying to keep my shit together every day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it is different when it's like, oh my gosh, what you did in Wally's life or Heidi, when you did this with Hannah, that to me is very personal. And I actually was there. It wasn't a script that I was following. And so I'm really proud of that. And it's easy. Then I can connect with that person that's talking to me. But it also started with Chris, because when I was working behind the scenes on the show, even though I was working with the people, Chris was the one getting the accolades. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting at first. But he's such a humble guy that it didn't really... And you know, our Cash was a baby at the time and my other kids were so little, I don't think they really knew any different. They were 4 and 5, I think, or maybe even younger at the time. And so it was something that we just kind of went with. And so what would happen is Chris was so good at saying, yeah, you saw me on TV with Alex, but Heidi was actually the one that was in charge of his transformation. So he would redirect to me. And it was, they're like, yeah, that's nice. But Chris, you know, but to me, it was such a gradual thing. And then as it started happening on camera, people just would kind of, oh my gosh, Chris, what you did with this person, what you guys, I love what you do. And even to this day, it's like, there's nothing better than walking into a gym and having people say, hey, the work you do in this world is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like it's different than you're a celebrity.
Was there any downside to that level of exposure in either personally in your, either for you personally or in your marriage?
Yes.
Yeah. What was the downside?
100%. You know, the downside for me at first was I knew how hard I worked. I'm not a fame person, but I do like, everybody likes to be appreciated for what they do.
Yeah.
And I felt that I had days, and this is my perspective, so it wasn't correct, but Chris was, we were both working our butts off, and that's why it didn't really take head for a while. Chris was really more on camera. He needed to be on Good Morning America. He needed to travel and be on these, you know, and I felt like sometimes I was left to clean up the pieces while raising kids and dealing with my dad dying and I'm pregnant and I'm doing all this stuff and I have all the problem children in Arizona, and I loved it because I thrived on being busy, but I felt like there were times where I would turn somebody around and who was on the verge of getting kicked off. And then it'd be like, okay, let's deliver him to Chris to be the savior on TV.
Wrap a bow on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was hard. And it was something Chris was very delicate with me, and he was so great. So it wasn't anything where it was like, well, what the heck? I mean, no, it was never a fight. Mm-hmm. I just had a little bit of like ego, like a emotional pain.
Yeah.
Like, gosh. And that's, I think, why Chris was so good about giving me credit to people. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened, though, when the dynamic of our marriage and our relationship was based on me being behind the scenes and Chris being on camera, mm-hmm. and we were stable that way. Well, the shift began to happen, and I'm doing a little visual for you right here, mm-hmm. where we both were equal. Mm-hmm. Which was really hard then for Chris. And I don't know if you pull up, you know, we did a podcast with Ed Milette where Chris was very open and very vulnerable about it. it's been really hard on him, hard on me to feel like I deserve to be where I'm at. Because I had years where I was like, oh my gosh, he's right. I need to let him shine. And then, it's been a process for us to be like, no, it's okay for us both to be where we're at and both to be in the limelight. I will say, I think it's been harder for him, and he would say the same, to see my brand rise, because I have a lot of the control behind the scenes too, and in the business world. And I don't think that he cares so much about seeing my brand rise as he knows that it's him making himself not as important when he looks at it. He's like, well, crap, if Heidi's there, what does that make me? Mm-hmm. But then when you look at behind the scenes, the app that we have, that is incredible. Chris did all of it. I can't take credit for that. Like, he is the mastermind behind that. I'm one of the faces. And so it's kind of, I see there's balance in all things. It's been a process for him to adjust to that. And so we're getting there. But what we've realized for us is we actually do need space in more areas, like to do everything together, to raise kids together, to have business together, to be married, to have, all these things together. We realize there has to be a level of separation or space.
Separate and mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't do everything together all the time. It winds up decaying.
No.
Speaking of challenges, all entrepreneurs run into challenges, right? Yeah. Can you tell me about the grandma that you had to take down in Bellingham, Washington for using your URL?
Well, what's funny is that was a really, I have a bad memory, so I have to go back through that. I didn't have to take her down. If I remember correctly, we'd have to pull up all the documents. She had a click to pay. Basically, there was search engine traffic going. People were looking up Heidi Pell, and they were going to her site, and I would have people come to me saying, hey,
I'm getting grandma.
Well, they would say HeidiPell.com is free. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I actually would go there. And I had a web guy that was like, no, it's not. Well, I knew years ago it went to a Facebook page, so I never even thought twice about it. I think we had offered them money. Oh, we did. And they came back and said, yes. They gave us a price of like $1,000, and we went to go pay, and they're like, oh, never mind, 50. They had Googled, and they saw.
Figured it out.
Yeah. And so I'm like, thanks, but no thanks. We let it go to the side. Right. And then we found out down the road, there was traffic being redirected. I guess it's like click to pay sites. So like if they land there, you click on a button and they get paid.
Yeah.
So then my attorney's like, that's not okay.
Yeah.
People are searching you. Then it turned into this.
So you trademark your name, which I'm sure it is.
My name was already trademarked.
Okay.
Yes. And so we ended up winning.
Did you win?
Yeah. Okay, because good. I mean, you look at the evidence, and it was kind of a sad thing, because I don't know that she was all there mentally, know, and there was a lot of emotional kind of.
Yeah, there's a meal ticket for it too.
I know.
You know, the reason why I
do wish her the best.
The reason why I bring up things like this is when you're an entrepreneur, you're dealing with all kinds of shit. Yep. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I remember I had people at the time emailing or texting saying, I'm so sorry you're going through this. And I'm like, gosh, how do they know? Number one. Number two, I'm not that worried about it, because I just. It's another thing, and it's not going to be the last.
It's not going to be the last.
No.
What tip have you received about marriage that has helped you the most?
Oh, boy. I feel like Chris and I are not the ones to give marriage advice, because we're always evolving and figuring out our own stuff. I will say, I'm sure I've received it. So anything good that I can give is something that I've received. I am a firm believer in giving everyone, especially your significant other, the benefit of the doubt.
Mm.
There are three sides to every story. There's mine, there's yours, and there's the truth. And I think they're mine and yours is also the truth, but it's our very own truth.
Yeah.
And I think it means so much, and trusting intentions, like that means so much to me.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I, if Chris and I have a dispute, my thing is, I just need you to trust my intentions. Like, trust me. Just know who I am, and would I ever, hurt you? Would I ever? And so that's just a big, that's a huge thing.
It's actually a great tip. We're going to go from there to sex.
Oh.
What's the 30-day sex challenge, and why did you do it?
So the 30-day sex challenge was something that Chris and I, I'll say it now. Mm-hmm. And I posted about it, so this is nothing new, but we've been on the verge of divorce a handful of times.
Yeah.
And when I say divorce, it's not like it's like an all out battle. It's just like, gosh, maybe this life partnership thing that we were onto at first is actually better for us than marriage, you know?
Yep.
And it's something we still talk about. We don't know. We don't know where we're going to be. We tattooed my best friend on our finger for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's not I love you or my husband or my wife, because that's not as important as having a good relationship. And it looks different for everybody. But we were at a really difficult time. Mm-hmm. And we were planning on divorcing. Mm-hmm. And our neighbor, who's also our business partner, had come in and he had said, okay. And he was in the middle of it. He was playing mediator between us and whatever. Because it wasn't great at the time. And he's like, I watched this thing or read this article, 30-Day Sex Challenge. It literally has saved marriages. You guys have to try it. And for me, that was like a dream come true. Because I am like, yes!
You're ready to rock.
Oh, yeah. And anyway, so yeah, we ended up doing it, and it's come hell or high water.
Well, just for clarity, it's having sex every day for 30 days.
Okay, 30 days.
I didn't know if it was the opposite, if it was abstinence. No. So you're all in. Forgive the pun.
All in. All in for 30 days, and it doesn't matter what time of the month it is. It doesn't matter. You are all in.
Yeah.
And like at first, because I am, that for me is like a dream come true.
Yeah.
And about the first 5 days, I was on cloud nine. I'm like, this is the best thing ever. Right. Oh my gosh.
By the way, this could be the next reality show, but go ahead.
But then I would say like day six,
when
you're pissed at the person and you're like, I didn't want to touch him. He didn't want to touch me.
Right.
We would have days where we're like, we would say it. I am only banging you right now because we committed to a 30-day sex challenge. Right. If I weren't, no way. We were mad, like literally like we're divorcing. We would do our thing,
really
have sex,
and
we would literally laugh after. Like, what the hell? It was the most amazing thing for us. It really, truly was.
So did it pee? these analogies of you. Did it peak? I don't know how to say it any other way. Did it peak where it was like...
It never exploded.
Like 2 weeks, 2 weeks into it, was it getting better?
Worse.
It was getting worse.
So the actual act itself was not as enjoyable. So anytime you do something over and over it's not as enjoyable. But what was amazing was our connection. So sex became something so much more than physical, where sex for me was always pretty physical.
Yeah.
And it became that we were, it was more about, I'm taking time out of my day for this person to be, there's literally nothing between us. Only me, only Chris. It was almost like an act of service, not physical service, but emotional and spiritual service. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I mean, there's nothing you can do. Like, even if you're watching a movie with the person or you're going to dinner, there's so much other stuff happening. There's never 10 minutes of sex or however long, everyone's a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm about 3.5 seconds, okay. But go ahead.
So 3.5 seconds.
Yeah. But they're magical. They're incredible.
Well, the connection, she's not thinking about anything else. She's with you and you're not thinking about anything else.
Right.
And so it really does become a very bonding thing. Now I will say, because we haven't done it since. Well, we haven't had 30-day challenge since.
How long ago was the 30-day challenge?
It was about a year and a half ago.
About a year and a half ago. Okay. And do you...
Actually, 2 years ago now.
Okay. Do you go back to where it was prior to that? Just sort of...
And
what we'll call it, maintenance sex? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it... Do you just default back to... So for you, it was more like a reset, a reboot.
It was great. The one thing I will say... I think it may have given us a false sense of connection in some senses. Now, in hindsight, that might not have been there. It might have been created by endorphins and hormones and, lovey-dovey fantasy land feelings.
Yep.
Because we were really good. And Chris and I talk about it. We're like, gosh, if we would do that again, we'd go back to that. But then it's like, but is that real?
Right.
Like, does it make us avoid the things that, like... might not be good for us to be avoiding,
Right.
And so, for the most part, it does go, and you ebb and flow when your relationship's better. Actually, I can say, you can say when your relationship's better, you're having sex more. But I actually think when you're having sex more, your relationship's better.
Yeah.
Because you're more patient with each other. You're not, you trust intentions a lot more when you are connected in that way. And I know for Chris and I, that's a big deal.
So from a, you're a methodology structured kind of gal, right?
Yes.
You also have four children.
Yes.
There's a reality and a practicality to running businesses, taking care of your gym time, taking care of your alone time, et cetera.
Yeah.
How do you find the time when it comes to this relationship portion of it? And where, you know what I mean? Like, for example, when I think about this, this is just honest, vulnerable. Yeah. There is a reality, you know, in 3 hours, you know, I'll hear three more bells at that school behind you and a little five-year-old is going to come in this door, okay?
Yeah.
And then that five-year-old is going to take over life until she goes to bed and we're both like, can't open our, you know, keep our heads up until 9:30 at night. How do you take the time, if you do, to make sure that that romantic side of your life is serviced with, you have it four times more than I do. Cause my, I have a 22-year-old, but she's not in the house any longer. She's grown.
Yeah.
So how do you do it?
I'm being vulnerable and honest. That's if Chris and I have a weakness, that's it. Mm. Like our marriage is definitely, now I don't want to say our relationship, but our marriage. So the romantic side of our, maybe marriage is the wrong word. But that connection on a level where I'm wife, you are husband, is definitely lacking. Now, with us taking time out to be business partners together, we're great.
Yeah.
With us taking time out to be even friends together, we're great. With us taking time out to be co-parents together, we're great.
Mm-hmm.
With us taking time out to fulfill what I think society sees and what we see as a husband's duty and a wife's duty, we are not good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a way, I think it's about priorities where for some marriages and some relationships, I should say for some relationships, that is the most important and it should be, put at the top. But I think because that side of it came by default for us after we created a friendship, we created business, we decided we wanted kids together. And then it was like, oh yeah, let's sign the document. It's always been an afterthought for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we struggle, we naturally go, okay, where do we need distance? We have kids that need us and a family. So we cannot take time away from those four. Cannot.
Yep.
And I have two more kids and he treats those two kids like his own.
Mm-hmm.
We have a business. And when I say business, we have a mission. We have a mission that we started out on together. That cannot go. Our friendship. If we don't have a friendship, Chris, we can't do these two things well together. Okay, so that leaves romance or the marriage, the certificate.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one where we say, Kate, we're going to put that to the side. Because if we have these three things, right or wrong, everyone's different. For us, that is a happy place for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's where when we start going here too much, focusing on the marriage, oddly, there's a sense of self-worth. It's almost like the emotions that come with that start bleeding, the negative emotions start to bleed into our friendship.
Those areas.
They bleed into our family. They bleed into our mission. They bleed into all these things and start to almost make it a little bit toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are times where we're like, hey, we need some space in that area.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need the pressure. We don't want to make the other feel inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just hold each other to these three things and we are good, whatever that looks like.
It's interesting finding balance in all the areas of your life. There's so many areas, right? Between work and money and marriage and children and, you know,
all the hats you have to wear.
Spinning those plates.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to jump into, oh my God, time is flying by with you. Wow, it is flying by. We are crushing it. So I'm going to, for the sake of time, I'm going to go through some things with you. And these are going to be random questions, so just roll with it.
Let's do it, okay.
What is an unusual or an absurd thing that you love?
Oh boy, I don't know. I mean, is it absurd to say that that's boring. I love work. Mm-hmm. I love to laugh. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's something that I'm really a pretty simple person. Mm-hmm. I like my grande iced coffees with one pump of mocha and a side of heavy cream from Starbucks. That's what I like. And my marshmallow dream bars. I don't know that that's absurd.
You're a certainty girl, right?
I am.
You like predictability.
I do.
Well, look, they say if you spot it, you got it.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that. I did it. Do you know who Lori Harder is?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
Lori's a good friend of ours.
Yeah.
And we were in Greece together, and we were talking about my need to have certainty, yeah, and predictability, et cetera. And she said, you got to leave room for the magic. I said, I'm fine with the magic. Yeah. As long as it happens at 8:30. As long
as... See, I might be a blend of the two of you because I like certainty and predictability. I also, that is one of the things, Chris and I like, I have a little bit of a crazy bug in me. I do. And if you watch my Insta stories, I'm a little, Chris is like,
Crazy in what way?
I don't have much of a filter.
Yeah.
You can't tell.
Yeah.
And I like to have fun. And when I say have fun, I don't mean go get tanked or drunk.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
Yeah.
I am somebody that, I'm looking at that picture right there of everybody with their drinks. I could be with that group of guys right there.
Yeah.
Have no alcohol in me and
have a great time.
Feel drunk.
Right.
Like we always laugh. It's like Heidi gets drunk by osmosis. And I do. You put me in a situation, I become that situation, and I love it. Whatever situation is.
That's great. You know,
you put me in a boardroom right after, I can clean it up and be.
I love that. This is a side note, but there's a concept in Korean culture called nunchi. And
okay.
Nunchi, when you're a little kid in Korea, they train you to understand the energy of the room,
okay,
and to recognize that you're walking into a certain energy, and your job as the person that walks into the energy is to go into the energy, because when you come in, you're disrupting it.
Got it.
So it's the nunchi of the room. It's a new book that's out. I think you'd really dig it.
I say it a lot. I am a chameleon, and not in a way where I'm a fraud at all, but in a way where I can adapt to the situation and actually thoroughly enjoy the situation. So that is a good and a bad thing. The bad for me is I need to be really careful which situations I put myself in, because I can easily adapt and become something that I just need to be aware of. I'm very aware of that
Love
I need to be careful.
What new behavior or belief in the last number of years or months has significantly improved the quality of your life?
If you can dream it, you can do it.
Are there any positions or opinions in the last few years, or it could be way back, it doesn't have to be in the last few years, that you've changed substantially or shifted your position on, where you're like, I used to think this way, but I don't think that way anymore?
I think the biggest thing would be, I thought it was diet and exercise first, emotional behavioral change after, where really now I see, hey, once you nail emotional, mental, behavioral changes, and then add the diet, the results come. I mean, in any way in your life, it's like if you can figure out the secrets to transformation, it will positive. You can change anything in your life.
I like
and I
that.
Didn't realize that.
They call that.
I was a symptoms person before, not the root.
Like that. Somebody taught me that there's a halo goal. When you accomplish this goal, it affects the others in a halo kind of way. That's what reminds me of
that.
Yeah,
I love it.
All right. This is a rapid fire round.
Okay.
Answer as quickly or as slowly as you like, and then we're going to wrap up. What would your friend say is your superpower?
Unconditional love.
What's one thing you're afraid of right now?
Speaking.
We talked about that. What keeps you up at night?
Not much.
What do people never ask you, but you wish they did?
The people in my life are so good. So I don't think that there's any unfulfillment there.
What book have you reread the most?
7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So simple.
He's great.
I know.
Mormon too.
Yeah, I know.
Other than coffee.
Okay.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Marshmallow Dream Bar. It's a Rice Krispie treat. Every day I have it from Starbucks. Every day.
No freaking.
Yeah, I had one before I came in.
There's no way.
I swear. I'll show you the wrapper when we go out to the car.
There is no way.
Sometimes two.
There is no way. I am looking at a chiseled statue. Where does the marshmallow go?
It goes right in there.
Oh,
right in that muscle.
God. Okay. So two questions left. One is, if you had to give a TED talk,
Okay.
And I know we talked about this, but if you had to give a TED talk on nothing that you're known for, nothing that you have spoken about before, and it can be on anything that you're interested in, but can't be on what you're known for.
Oh boy.
What would it be?
I don't know that I'm known for this, but it is something I'm probably more passionate about than anything.
Yeah.
And it's finding, I mean, maybe it does relate, but finding and tapping into the power that every single person has inside.
Yeah.
That's what I would talk about.
I love that.
Yeah.
Which is telling me that you're living your passion, because that's what you're doing. All right. Last question. Okay. We're going to switch things up. What would you like to ask me?
Oh boy. I know what I want to ask you. How did you get all of this information on me? That's what I want to know.
Well,
did you have a private investigator?
You didn't see the one parked outside your house?
You know what's funny? I was on a flight with a private investigator yesterday. Was that him? I was.
He was following you around. But he missed the marshmallow.
He did.
Mm-hmm. The pizza store.
It was
store,
in my backpack. That's why.
I'm still pissed about the marshmallow, the pizza store, and the Mormon. Heidi, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You are so welcome. All right. Thanks for listening. If you love this episode and you know someone that needs some help in either stepping up their work hard game or their play hard game, it would mean the world to me if you shared this podcast with them to help me get this movement out there. So if you like what you heard, head on over to iTunes, take 30 seconds and leave me a 5-star review, and I will be forever grateful. So until the next episode, excuses are over. It's time to live.